Jesus, what a friend for sinners, Jesus, lover of my soul.
Welcome to the Unknown Bible, the broadcast ministry of Bible Believers Baptist Church in Corpus Christi, Texas. Join us now for today's Bible study with our pastor, Bevins Welder.
Hallelujah, what a Savior. Hallelujah, what a friend.
Ephesians chapter 6, verse 4. Ephesians chapter 6, verse 4. Now that's just one verse, but watch what it says. And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Simple verse, but it's often, many times, overlooked. You know, when God wrote things in the Bible, He didn't put these down as just mere suggestions on how to have a better life. Much of this stuff is written in the order of a command or a charge. And this is a charge from Paul the Apostle to us as fathers. I'm the father of four children. I don't know how many you have. You may have one, you may have 10, but you're a father. And the Bible clearly shows a direct charge to us as fathers, what we are not to do and what we are to do. Very simple, one verse. Ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Now yesterday we were reading about children and the duty they have to obey their parents, the duty they have to honor mother and father, and the reasons why they should do that. And part of this thing involved a discipline or a chastening, as the Bible shows us about the rod of correction. Now, fathers, we are given something here by Paul that tells us not to provoke our children to wrath. So let's look at that and see what that involves, because if we are to correct them and yet not bring them to anger or bring them to wrath, we have to understand how to balance that so that the correction we do give, the nurture we do give, the admonition we do give is well received and doesn't create a bitterness or an anger that our children never get over. Now, it's unmistakable, Dad, that you and I have the duty of seeing to the spiritual nurturing of our children. Now, the trouble today is there are so many busted houses. Dad's not with his children. They're with mom, or mom and her boyfriend, or mom and her new husband. And they're with dad about half the time, or less than half the time, or whenever he can get his visitation in. And what do you do in a situation where you've got a father, but he gets his children some of the time, and then you have a stepdad, and they don't see together on exactly how that child should be raised? How much liberty is the wife going to give for her second husband, for the stepfather of the children, to raise the children up? And what's going to be right? And who's going to supply the discipline? And boy, you talk about a mess. It is a tough deal these days. It is a very, very tough deal these days. I remember talking to a fellow recently, and he told me that when his oldest daughter was 8 years old, she came home from school one day looking kind of down in the mouth. And he said, honey, what's the matter? And she said, Dad, I don't know if you know this, but most of my friends have two daddies and two mommies. And when they have a birthday or Christmas or some special celebration, they get twice as many presents as I do because I only have one dad and I only have one mom. Now, that's from the perspective of a child, but that's wild. You know, a lot of children have learned in this divorce game how to play the stepdad and the dad against themselves and the stepmom and the mom against themselves, and they come out pretty sweet on the deal. A lot of these kids these days being raised in households like this are very spoiled, very spoiled. And so it's a very tough thing. If you're the stepfather of children, how much liberty do you have with the mother of those children who live under your roof to do what you're being told to do here in verse 4. Well, somebody better get this ironed out, because the kids are the one that are going to pay the price in the long run if these things aren't ironed out that we're looking at today. Somebody has got to be the authority in their life. Somebody has got to supply the nurture and admonition. Somebody has got to be able to provide the discipline and yet not provoke the children to wrath. Just has to be done. Now, it'd be ideal in a situation like that, and busted homes are never ideal, but it would be ideal if both dads, isn't that strange, the real father and then the stepfather, were eye to eye on exactly how this should be done, but that would oftentimes leave the mother of the children in a real quandary to find that her step the stepfather of the children and the father of the children were in agreement on anything. Usually there's a war. So aside from all the mess and aside from all the problems, it needs to be well established. Somebody has got to provide the discipline, provide the direction in the household. Well, the first command here, fathers, and hopefully, you are the father of your children, and the woman who is helping you raise those children is their mother, hopefully, unless she was deceased or something, and then you've brought in another woman, a second wife, because your wife is dead. And if it's any other situation than that, I understand. It's very typical these days. We find many, many people get saved after they've been divorced. God, you know, use that in their lives to bring them to a place where they wanted to marry somebody that would be spiritual. And so, you know, if you're in that situation, like I said, it's just very, very important that these things be clearly understood. Somebody has got to do this job. All right, the first thing to do is don't provoke them to wrath. Don't provoke them to wrath. Well, look in Colossians chapter 3 at verse 21 and notice, same thing. Fathers, provoke not your children to anger, lest they be discouraged. When a child gets angry, they get very discouraged and they go off and do some crazy things. Now, there are a number of things you can do to provoke your children to wrath. One thing you can do is set up a double standard. You give preference to one child over another child, or if there are several children in the household, you have a favorite. A lot of times that turns out being the youngest because they're the last, they're the caboose. It may be the girl when there are three other boys in the household or something like that. And you'll set up a standard where you treat one of them rougher than you treat the other one, or you give one a lot more liberty than you give the other. I'll give you an example of this in the case of Joseph. If you remember back there in the Old Testament, Joseph was the firstborn son of Rachel. Jacob ended up with four wives, the two handmaids, and Leah and Rachel. And he treated Joseph better than he treated the other boys in his household. And when he did, that set up a situation where there was envy and strife in the household. If you look back here to Genesis chapter 37, excuse me, at verse 3, now Israel loved Joseph more than all his children, because he was the son of his old age. And he made him a coat of many colors. And when his brethren saw that their father loved him more than all his brethren, they hated him and could not speak peaceably unto him. Verse 11, his brother envied him. See that? So you get a situation like that where you set up and you treat one better than the other, somebody's going to get mad. And in the case of Joseph's brother, they got mad because Joseph was treated better and tried to kill him. Eventually sold him off into slavery, and God, of course, used all that to fix it up for him later on in life. But none of them knew it at the time. Children, naturally, when they're very young, naturally love and want to love their fathers. That's why you hear a lot of stories about children talking well of their fathers when they get to school, you know, bragging on them, what they do, and that kind of thing. But if dad is a bum, he doesn't want to work, he lies around the house drunk all the time, fights with mom, you know, in other words, sets some horrible examples around the household, basically an angry fellow and is trying to blame children for his anger, then he becomes an embarrassment to his children. And they're ashamed of him. They don't want people to come to the house to see their dad. They don't want to talk about their dad to their friends. They're ashamed of him. I know of a situation where a fella had apartments. And these particular apartments had rental assistance programs in them so that there were some families who got to live there and neither the father nor the mother worked. And because of their impoverished conditions, they were able to qualify for rental assistance, and they basically got to live in these and had their rent supplemented. Okay, what he would do as an incentive to the fathers who weren't working is that many times he would put next door to a father who wasn't working somebody who was gainfully employed that wanted to live, because nice place to live. He'd put them in there, and then at Christmas time, what would happen is the children of the fellow that was working would be sporting a new bicycle, new shoes, something like that, something nice that they'd received for Christmas or for a birthday. And the children next door would say, now, where'd you get that? And the child would say, well, my father works, and he was able to buy this for me. So the child would go home then to the father that didn't work and say, well, why don't you get a job? So-and-so, Johnny or whatever, he ended up with a nice deal here. And, you know, what he saw in this is that that actually provoked several of the fathers to get up and go do something because it was a matter of pride with them to be able to supply the necessities of their family and be able to give something nice to the children on special occasions. And what that did is that actually did several things. One, it gave the guy an incentive to work, and he started working. He, of course, was able to better himself. It also gave his children a lot more pride in their father, and it gave him a lot more pride because he was not dependent upon somebody else to take care of him all the time. So that really helped the family situations. So if dad's, you know, messing up, the children are going to get mad about it. Another way to anger children, fathers, is to take your anger out on them, and that's a bad deal. I remember one time listening to a radio message that Charles Stanley had done, and he talked about the fact that when he was a young boy, he had a stepdad, and the stepdad was angry and would come home a lot of times and try to blame the children for the way that he felt. And I think Stanley used the expression, he didn't internalize the anger, which may be I don't know exactly where he got the expression, but to internalize the anger, I understood it meant that he didn't accept the blame for the fact that his father was mad or his stepfather was mad, and so he grew up normally. But a lot of children are not like that. A lot of children will accept the blame and try to do something in order to try to make dad feel better. And, there, of course, there's a tremendous amount of frustration in that because the more you bend over backwards to make dad happy and the more dad is not happy, the more you try, the more frustrated you become, the angry you become with yourself and with dad and with the situation at home because there's nothing you can do to fix the situation, and yet somehow or another you have convinced yourself it was your fault. And that provokes a child to anger. And that's a bad deal. Now, you know, a lot of times you'll find out in dealing with people, you've got a friend that comes to you and they want to talk to you, kind of cry on your shoulder a little bit or whatever, and it's good to have friends where you can do that. And you'll find that deep down, if they're honest with you, there are two really negative emotions that are way down deep inside of them, fear and anger. Now, the right kind of fear is okay because it yields wisdom and it yields obedience. Remember, we looked yesterday that children were to fear mother and father, from the standpoint that what they said went and they had to do it. Also, the beginning of wisdom is the fear of the Lord. That's the right kind of fear. It's a healthy fear. For instance, fear, I was talking to a fellow one time, he said, nobody's going to tell me what to do. And it really aggravated that the law became that, you know, he had to wear seatbelts. But he also worked a lot of traffic accidents, and he saw a situation where a number of people that died in fatal car accidents died because they weren't wearing seatbelts, and he started wearing his seatbelt. Why? Because he had a respect for what it could do. There were a number of people who should have died in accidents that didn't, who were spared because they had enough fear of a calamity to go ahead and put the belt on, and it certainly had an effect on him. In that case, see, fear is a very positive thing. Fear will prompt you in a dark alley not to take a shortcut home, but to stay on a lighted path or to walk with a friend to keep from getting mugged. That's a healthy kind of fear. Fear will keep you from being careless around fuels and explosives. You know, it'll teach you to be cautious. That's a healthy kind of fear, and those kinds of fear are appropriate. Now, there's a wrong kind of fear as well, one that yields a snare. The fear of man bringeth a snare. That kind produces anger, and the anger that's stuffed on top of that fear is going to provoke a child to go into drugs or alcohol or sex or perversion or some other kind of wickedness. It is bad. Now listen, it is never right for the child to choose to do those things, but if you as a dad have set up an environment in your house where things are very frustrated, there's constant arguing and bickering between you and mom, you're in and out of jobs, you're blaming the children, kicking the dog, slamming your fist, you know, that kind of stuff. Some of your children, at least, are probably going to blame themselves for that. They're going to be afraid of you when you come home, drunk or however you come home. And they're going to become angry with themselves when they become angry with you. And you're going to find out that your children are going to follow in your footsteps. And worse, they're going to hook up with gangs and all that other kind of stuff, and then all of a sudden you're going to find out that you had something to do with it. You're not going to sit down and cuss a child and drive a child and beat a child and express no love to a child without producing an angry child, a wrathful child, and one who is going to hate church, hate preaching, hate God, hate you, hate mom, and hate themselves. And you got to really watch out for that. Really got to watch out for that. Because why? Because the Bible tells you that not to provoke your children to wrath. Don't you know your children well enough to know when they're upset about something? Don't you have enough concern for them to be able to look at them? Don't you have enough time with them to be able to tell when they're upset? How many times is the child on Saturday when you're finally off of work really, really look forward to spending a little bit of time with Dad throwing pitch in the backyard or throwing the football or going fishing with you or going hunting with you? Or just having a time to sit on the porch swing or go down to the burger joint and sit down and have a burger with Dad or go out and get breakfast with Dad. How many times does your child look forward to that on Saturday morning and you've disappointed them because you came home drunk on Friday night and you were hungover on Saturday and couldn't take that time with your child because you were feeling bad? All of a sudden you got exploding at them because they just anticipated there would be a little bit of time with Dad and that frustrated you and you got mad at them, then they got mad at you. You ever seen that happen before? It's detestable. There are all kinds of things, you know, it's Saturday after Saturday comes by and you make all these plans to be away and you don't spend time with the kids and they really get upset about that. And of course you get mad because they're upset and you think it's unfair. You've been working hard all week and after all, you need some time on the golf course or at the fishing boat with your buddies, of course. Look, if you don't take care of those children to raise them up, who's going to do it? The school? I don't think so. The church? I don't think. The youth pastor? God forbid. It's your responsibility, and you've got to be careful. First of all, negative side, don't provoke your children to wrath. That's what Paul said. All right, now what's the second thing? He said, but bring them up. We call that upbringing. Bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Well, there are a lot of dads that have taught their kids how to cuss. There are a lot of dads that have taught their kids how to dip. There are a lot of dads that have taught their kids how to smoke. There are a lot of dads that have taught their kids how to watch perversion on television because they tell them this isn't right for you, and you send them off to bed, and then they peek out of the door, and they see what you're watching, and they get a little older, and they think, well, that's what adults do, and they get a little older, and they do it. Or you teach them how to play cards, or you teach them how to gamble, or you teach them how to do all the bad things that you've learned how to do. And you don't realize that you're doing that by example. Paul said you bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Well, what does it mean to nurture somebody? What is nurture? Nurture is the education or upbringing or training that a child receives or possesses. Nurture is moral training. Nurture is discipline. And look, I'm going to tell you something. You can't let mom do this alone. You know, you're working and she's at home. You say, well, you're supposed to take care of that. It didn't say moms. Bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. It said fathers. Now, I realize that mothers have something to do with this, but that's your responsibility. You can't let mom do that alone. You certainly can't depend upon school to take care of that responsibility. It is not right. It's not legal for schools to bring up children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, not public schools. And I wouldn't trust a Christian school to do it either. A Christian school may be able to give your child an education that is void of the doctrinal error of, you know, evolution education without salvation is damnation. Bob Jones Sr. said they may be able to lead your child to the Lord and do a couple other things like that. They cannot bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord because they're not going to be able to give them the moral training, the discipline. Hey, there's not a Christian school that's going to be able to discipline your children right. There are limitations on what they can do. You have to do that. And you're the one that has to train them. The school can educate them, but you've got to train them. And nurturing has to do with training and upbringing. And they're not raising your children. They're educating your children. They're just an extension of the family in a Christian school or whatever. It's supposed to be anyway. It doesn't always work out like that, but that's the way it's supposed to be. So you can't let mom do it alone. You can't let the school do it. You can't let the church do it. Somebody complained to me the other day, and he was right, that we have in churches been guilty of establishing a subculture of youth with youth pastors and little youth programs and youth events and youth camp and youth this and youth that. And so that all of a sudden there is a break now in the family. Mom and dad have their Sunday school, and the kids have their Sunday school. And I realize that sometimes it's good to have some training time for kids, but, you know, it's better most of the time, for instance, at a church service, for the moms and dads and children to all be there together and not to set up this separate entity of children and expecting some slick-backed-haired, moosed-up-headed youth pastor with big bold posters of rock stars in his office to try to teach your children how to live right. That's not right. All right, that's nurture. Nurture is left to the dad, and it has to do with training, see? It has to do with discipline. Now, discipline is oftentimes, you know, the chastening that we talked about yesterday. But hey, outside of that, if all you do is discipline and you never give any moral training or training in the home, in Bible or something else, that child's not going to grow up, and you're not right, and you're not going to fulfill your responsibility. You can't just punish them and bring them back into line. You've got to train them when they get out of line. You got to show them what went wrong. I mean, I've coached soccer for about 10 or 11 years. I've trained dogs to retrieve and things like that. Discipline is not, you know, punishment is not the only thing you can do. You can't just keep punishing somebody because they do something wrong. You've got to show them how to do it right. And if you're not doing it right, why will they do it right? I think it's silly for men to send their children off to Sunday school and church and not go themselves. That's crazy. That's insanity. You've got to train them. You've got to lead by example. All right, that's nurture. All right, what is admonition? What is admonition? Well, admonition is this. It's gentle and friendly reproof, warning, or reminder. In other words, you get upset with a child over doing something wrong, and you want to give them an admonition. There's a gentleness involved in the reproof. There's a warning. If they keep it up, something bad is going to happen. There's a reminder. Admonition is counsel against a fault or error or oversight. It gives them counsel to show them where they went wrong. It's an expression of authoritative advice or warning. Now, you take a look at Timothy's life. In 2 Timothy chapter 3, Paul is writing to Timothy, and he says this in verse 15, that from a child thou hast known the Holy Scriptures, which are able to make thee wise unto salvation through faith which is in Christ Jesus. He learned that from a child. And actually, the faith that he had was an unfeigned faith, which he got from his mother and his grandmother. And somebody pointed them into the Scriptures. But let me show you something now. That admonition reproves them, that warns them, that reminds them, that counsels them against the fault, that gives an authoritative advice and warning, is something that best comes from dad. And I'll show it to you in Proverbs. Look at Proverbs chapter 4. Proverbs chapter 4. Sometimes, I mean, Paul got it from his mother and his grandmother. Sometimes in these busted homes, Mom, you're going to be left with this responsibility, and you're going to really have to work at it. But it'd sure be good if there was a dad around to take care of this responsibility. A dad may not be saved, may not want to do it. Proverbs chapter 4, look at verse 1. Hear ye children the instruction of a father. See, he has to instruct his children, and attend to no understanding. For I give you good doctrine, forsake ye not my law. For I was my father's son, tender and only beloved in the sight of my mother. He taught me also, and said unto me, let thine heart retain my words, keep my commandments, and live. Well, it was for his life that his father gave him that instruction. Look at Proverbs chapter 1, verse 8. My son, hear the instruction of thy father, and forsake not the law of thy mother. So she's involved. For they shall be an ornament of grace unto thy head and chains about thy neck. So fathers, you are to not only punish your children. You know, I can remember when I was growing up, my mother would say, wait till your father comes home. Then I'd get a whooping for being out of line. And I needed that. But I also needed instruction. I needed somebody to sit down with me and explain to me how I went wrong and what I needed to do to get the thing right. Now, in our household, and I don't hold my household up as any ideal household at all. Please, don't misunderstand me. But I'm just telling you, from personal experience, I've seen this with my children. I taught my children to swim at a very early age. And, of course, I went and had, there was a fellow there in town that was teaching children how to swim. But I was there with them in the pool. And then after we learned the basic things, I continued to give them some instruction. And so they would be safe around water. I've taught them Bible. We've sat down together on Sunday evenings and had Bible studies for a couple of years now at home. We sat down during homeschool. I was the Bible teacher, and I would take them through theological studies. A friend of mine wrote two theological studies. We used that, and we used that as a course guide. We went through there. I taught them basic doctrines. I wrote lessons and gave them things to help them to understand basic Bible doctrine. I taught them that. I didn't leave that to the church. I didn't leave that to the Sunday school teacher. I taught them. I taught my son how to hunt. I taught my daughters how to hunt. Some basic things. Might need that someday. Plus, it was fun. It was a great time for us. I would give them instruction in fishing. Because fishing is a great pastime, but it's also very productive. It's one way to get some good food on the table. I've taught them some basic things about soul winning. They've gone with me to pass out tracts, to talk to souls about Jesus Christ. They've even had an opportunity themselves to talk to souls about Jesus Christ. I've taught them how to teach. My son has had the opportunity a couple or three times to even teach Sunday school for the church. Just to try it. Teach them some things about preaching. Taught them some things about studying. I didn't leave that to a youth group or to a youth pastor or to a Sunday school teacher or somebody else. That, I felt, was the responsibility of Dad, and so we took that responsibility on and did that. Are there failures? Of course there are failures. Are there things that I should have done differently? No question. No question. Like I said, I'm not holding my household up as an ideal household. But you can tell with the things that we have going on, preaching and preaching to preachers and teaching and all the radio messaging thing, there's lots of time in my household that we're busy, and yet we still take time out to do these things, to teach them about horseback riding and other things like that. Very, very important. Dad, it is your responsibility not to provoke your child to wrath, but to give them nurture, train them up, discipline, admonition, teach them things that they need to learn. It is your responsibility, and you do that in the Lord. And the reason is, you train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. And you can be very happy that you didn't raise a fool for a son, but you raised a very wise son, and you had an active part of it. Now, the great thing about it is, that is going to guarantee you good grandchildren, because you've invested a great deal of time in your children. So it's an admonition. It's a charge from Paul the Apostle to us as dads. We have got to be busy about these things with our children.
You have been listening to The Unknown Bible, the radio ministry of Bible Believers Baptist Church in Corpus Christi, Texas. For information about our church, go to our church website at www.my3bc.com. That's my3bc.com. If you would like to contact us by telephone, our number is 361-241-6100. Bible Believers Baptist Church is a Bible-believing church located at 1701 Ranmorgan Road. If you are not currently a member of a Bible-believing church and you are looking for a church with an uncompromising stand on the words of God, come visit with us this Sunday or Wednesday. We would love to see you.
Hallelujah.